back-to-school savings are officially in session at Tanger Outlets. Shop the latest school styles with an extra 25% off during Tanger Style, our biggest sale of the season, now through August 25th. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is the occult? It's a word you hear and see often in alternative media, but it is never fully explained. You hear it thrown around with words like the Illuminati and Freemasonry, but it seems like there is no solid understanding. The easy definition of the occult is knowledge of the hidden, or for some, knowledge of the paranormal. But it is that last part, hidden or the paranormal, that is debated and discussed by all. What exactly is hidden? Why do certain symbols seem to transcend time, like the winged sun disk, which is a circle with two wings dating back to ancient Egypt and now used by multiple global corporations as their logo? Or the pentagram, the five-pointed star which dates back thousands of years and is now used by many corporations and governments? Is there a connection between these symbols and how these companies got their power and control? Or is it that these companies just know we are somehow drawn to these ancient symbols, and it is all just marketing strategy? Whatever it is, there seems to be too many coincidences and connections not to question.
Welcome to Alien Theorist Theorizing. I'm Zell.
I'm Dan.
And we have Andrew coming, but he's a little late. He's a paramedic, so he comes when he can. But what we have today, we got a guy. He's our most requested guest. This guy, he's been doing podcasts for like 5.5, 6 years. He is the host of the Higher Side Chats, the greatest interview-style conspiracy podcast out there. And he has agreed to come on tonight for an hour and a bit and drop some knowledge bombs about occult symbolism and its meaning in today's society. A lot of stuff that you never really... You see all these symbols all the time, but you don't know what they mean or where they come from. They're just there, and you're like, oh, what the fuck is this? So, introducing the man himself, Greg Carlwood. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Hey, man, appreciate it. Thanks for coming on. Small podcast here north of the border. Having a few beers. Slamming some conspiracies.
All right, let's crack one open with you.
Oh, buddy. Cheers to that.
Right into it.
When awesome. In Rome, right?
Of course.
Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and let's get weird.
That is the greatest saying at the start of your podcast when you say that. And you're like, well, yeah, this is pretty much exactly what you need to do here.
Yeah, I used to love saying that, and I kind of got away from it just because it's actually a little out of place because the show gets pretty deep and pretty serious. And sometimes, you know, people spend their life researching a certain topic, and it just felt like maybe sometimes the tone was a little awkward out of the gate to ask them such serious, deep level questions about their stuff and then just come out saying, smoke a little smoke, drink a little drink. It's not really, it's a little just off in tonality.
Yeah, it could be.
It has some overtones of just being a little bit like you're putting it that they're not, you know, I would say normal, but it's what, yeah, like you said, people have done their based their whole academic careers or things around these kind of topics. And, you know, and when you say that kind of stuff, it kind of maybe they feel it's less formal than it is or less serious, but it is it's stuff that needs to be talked about and needs to be brought out there into, you know, maybe mainstream society.
Mm-hmm. And the original context was more that I think the altering of consciousness helps us to open up to some of these stranger perspectives because we are in such consensus reality, 9 to 5 all day. And it's just, you know, a zombified monoculture. And it's kind of nice to smoke a joint, drink a beer and just either relax and decompress from that hell or open yourself up to going down some rabbit holes. So that was the original context that it's not that I don't take these things seriously. It's just that sometimes you need a little chemical jump start to get your consciousness to where it needs to be to get into some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's good too. Like when you go about it like super easy going like that, it makes it almost more approachable to a lot of people, right?
Because I think so.
Like a lot of conspiracy shows, you listen and it's just like it's very serious, and it's just like almost like a lecture, and you're like, oh, kind of like monotone. You don't really want to listen to it. Mm-hmm. But yours is like super easy going. Stoner just like us, talking about all these topics, just like with an open mind. It's awesome.
Yeah, just bring it in there. Freedom of thought. That's what it is. Just get in there.
Amen. Cheers.
Cheers to that. All right, Greg. So unlike us, you've had some guests on your podcast who talk a lot about occult symbols and like all like how it relates to modern society. Like some of these symbols go back thousands of years, but you see them in oil companies, or you see the you see all this stuff like everywhere. So like give us like just a quick summary of like what do you think what is all these occult symbols doing in modern society? Is it just like people exposing like an old like magic, as you say sometimes, like it's gonna like supposed to like affect our psyche in a way? Or
I absolutely think that a lot of the symbols affect our consciousness. I don't know that we even are sure why, but it does seem clear that they do. And I think these things are very ancient. I think it used to be more communal, and then the authorities of their day basically slaughtered everybody who was using it and kept that stuff behind lock and key. And that's how we got secret societies. And then you look at these CEOs and a lot of the guys who started these companies, you look at the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and you find that symbolism, this weird fascination with Sumeria in particular and Egypt, like they kind of invoke those eras quite often. And it seems to mean something to them. It's definitely a secret religion behind the curtain. But the symbols, I do think they contain some type of power, something that affects our consciousness. We see obelisks everywhere. We see, you know, the five-pointed star. We see the all-seeing eye, the black cube. And the definitions can vary depending on who you talk to. Some people say, oh, well, that's definitely a reference to Mithras, or this is definitely something, a reference to Osiris. And sometimes it's just really tough to pin it down, but I do think they affect our consciousness, or we wouldn't see them in nearly every corporate logo. Of course, we're just talking audio, but if you go and you look up corporate symbols and occult symbols, you just overlay them and it's like, wow, this is where they got this stuff. And why did they get these ideas? Well, they clearly have secret beliefs that they don't talk about in the mainstream. And I would guess it comes from their rising through the ranks of various secret societies.
Wow. I have a question. Do you think that it's the shapes or the specific shapes or that the like obelisks or things like that? Do you think these are themselves a type of focus, or they produce a kind of power or mind altering effect? Or is it that we've known these symbols and these shapes for so long? Like you said, if they've come from Egypt, which was one of the first real huge societies, when civilizations widespread, do you think it's just that they're lodged in our consciousness and that we are able to easier focus on that kind of, that rear consciousness that comes out in the back, that these symbols are so old that it's the people that give them power?
Yeah, it's tough to say. That is the million-dollar question. It's like a chicken or an egg thing. Like, what really came first and what is influencing what? But I guess I just think that we're attracted to them like a moth to a bug zapper in a lot of ways. And I'm sure, and it's also that I think they've been weaponized to a degree. And I don't necessarily know how to explain that or describe it, but it just seems like anything useful that can be used against us is used against us in a covert way. And I just think oil companies are one of the best examples where you see the symbolism kind of across the spectrum. And I guess it's like that is also the industry that comprises most of the capstone cabal, I think, is the nefarious oil companies and the robber barons of the early Americas. Like that's it. And so they clearly know something. They're using symbols that are so ancient, which is just so weird and fascinating. Like, why do they care? But look at the dollar bill. It's covered in all that stuff, and it's literally magic. I mean, it's something from nothing. It's like the whole country is under a spell that it's worth something, and it isn't. And it's covered in sigils. So, I mean, that's a pretty base example of magic we see and use every day. And it's easy to say it doesn't exist, but we are in a small sliver of time we call material atheism, where basically culture tells us that if you're an intelligent person, you're a material atheist. I mean, that's the only way to do it. And that's the, kind of the template we're given. Like Neil deGrasse Tyson is the intelligence god. You know, he is basically the archetype of what a smart person is, a smart liberal person in the modern world. But that's a small sliver of time where people have decided that there are no spiritual influences, there are no cosmic influences, that, you know, consciousness is not necessarily derived from the brain, that there is some fundamental component to man that isn't matter. I mean, that's the majority of humanity's worldview. I mean, that's where it's been for so long. So this stuff sounds foreign to talk about magic. It sounds a little silly in 2017 going on 18, but that's our context. I think our context is wrong. And I think the majority of the human story, they've been closer to the truth.
I don't think it's ridiculous at all to talk about magic in this period of time. And I know it's said that, you know, technology is approaching a point where it's almost a lot of it is like magic, or you would seem like it's magic. So injecting that kind of thinking that that there is something we're discovering so much about the universe so quickly now, that there are things that you can't possibly explain, and that all of even the smartest people that we consider like Einstein and them, their theories are becoming challenged, and that we have to create almost there will probably come a time where we have to tear down everything even that we base our logic on. Even like Neil deGrasse Tyson, I mean, he even says is like there might become a time where we need to tear down these theories back to their basis things and rebuild them. And it's like we can't stick to one thinking.
No doubt. And the funny thing about Neil deGrasse Tyson is that, you know, he's a heavily suspected Freemason. I think I've seen pictures of, I don't know if he's said so publicly, but it just seems like a lot of our science gods, you know, these infallible minds who just seem to know everything, we just outsource everything to them. A lot of them do have Masonic ties, or they're espousing doctrine that is really esoteric doctrine. Like, for example, the Big Bang Theory, which is basically accepted now to a lot of people, just kind of assume it. But what is it? Like, it's basically there's nothing really there. It's just like the world popped into existence on what, faith? I mean, it's basically a religion. And if you look at the Kabbalah and kind of the oldest esoteric ideas about where we came from, it is the Big Bang Theory. And so it's kind of like they're shoehorning esoteric and occult doctrine into the mainstream culture through the lens of science. And they're saying, oh, this is, you know, our best guess at things from a scientific perspective based on the best evidence we have. Well, you really have no evidence about something like the Big Bang in 2017, but they'll jump through some hoops and people will, their eyes will glaze over and they'll smile and nod. And they're actually being indoctrinated into occult ideas. I mean, it's kind of strange that way. But also the Big Bang Theory, that came from a Vatican priest. So it's like, you know, the Vatican kind of controls two sides of the mind paradigm. And I'm just always interested in power dynamics when it comes to our thoughts and our ideas and where they come from. And one thing that does happen is that shoehorning of esoteric stuff. And I think science and technology and magic are all pretty closely linked, especially if you know about stories like the Jack Parsons Babylon working in the 40s when, you know, Jack Parsons was our head rocket scientist, and him and L. Ron Hubbard are out in the desert trying to do some weird rituals based on Crowley's work. And, you know, people would kind of be surprised to hear that, because a scientist isn't supposed to be interested in spiritual, esoteric type things. They're supposed to be completely separate. But a lot of our leaders in these areas have occult ideas and occult views and partake in particular rituals, and they just don't talk about it all that much.
I think, yeah, they probably, if they do partake in these, like, they wouldn't mention it or think because of the fear of being discredited, as like they've spent their lives building up this type of, you know, intellectual like currency or, you know, worth that that we are putting our ideas in them. And that is based on that they don't do these kinds of things or, you know, that what are considered strange or out of the norm. I wanted to go back to what you said about like the Vatican and things like that. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like the origins of Christianity is that. Do you think that the Vatican or do you think Christianity has built on something that like a few people took advantage of what was at the time like a popular religion? I mean, during the time of Constantine, he was the first real Roman emperor to convert Christianity and make it popular. Before then, it wasn't really considered an influential religion. Do you think it was like people hijacked it, like you said, weaponized it after it became popular? Or is it just it's always been around?
Well, I think original Christianity, I mean, people talk about Gnostic Christianity, which is a lot more magical and it's basically pagan. And it's kind of actually hard to describe because it describes a lot of different sects and that kind of
super,
stuff.
Yeah, it's a lot of metaphysical stuff. It's super neat, though. I think it's super cool.
Absolutely. And I think, yeah, Christianity is basically an overlay of all that stuff that kind of strips out the magic from it, puts it behind a paywall and says just, you know, let's collect money for the one true God.
Okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good. I've never heard that before. That's neat. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, where they take it out and they make it, I guess you could make it, what's the word? Digestible for like for normal people, like I say normal people, but you know, the masses being able to get it out there. I mean, Gnostic religion has a lot to do with metaphysics and like, yeah, magic and you know, certain demiurges and things coming down and all these kinds of freedom of thought, which is, you know, Vatican and modern day Christianity kind of like the Vatican's built on power structure, like that's how it works basically.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the overall Gnostic view, like you mentioned the demiurge, I think the overall idea is that the material world is an illusion, a negative illusion, and that the goal is to rise above it, so to speak, and that the Abrahamic religions are not worshiping, you know, the one true God. They're worshiping the God of Earth or the creator of Earth, which is actually a lower level being in the hierarchy called the Demiurge. And he created this material world of illusion. And it's not a great place to be. It's actually a prison for the mind from the Gnostic perspective. And it's, you know, it gets basically into the story of the Matrix. Right. But, you know, you want to free yourself.
That parallels with, I think, at least my understanding of Buddhism, like it kind of where it's that this physical shell that you're in is not the real thing, that your mind and getting past the physical discomforts of this and putting aside physical discomforts and physical comforts regular is part of that religion, that you become enlightened when you move past that, that your mind reaches out to this form of nirvana or enlightenment. So the like Gnostic Christianity, does it have connections with Buddhism or are they completely separate? I don't know if you know.
I mean, thematically, if they're both about transcendence, then I would say, yeah. But I guess my problem with Buddhism has always been like the love, the struggle attitude. And that just seems like the right kind of philosophy to push on an oppressed people who are going to be working in the fields or factories most of their life. Just say, you know, life is suffering. And, you know, here's this Buddha. He was rich. He was an elite and he walked away from all of it because nobody really wants all this wealth and power and freedom. So don't even worry about it. Just be like Buddha. And I don't know. There's something convenient about teaching people that life is suffering.
I subscribe to the view that kind of Buddhism was formed as a counter religion to Hinduism, where Hinduism, you know, you're based into this metaphysical caste system where it's like, okay, if you do good in your job or wherever you're at, whether it's like at the very bottom, then you'll be reincarnated. So you have to do good in whatever place that you're put in. And then Buddhism was taught that the guy was like, no, it doesn't have to be that way. Everybody is the same. You know, once you put aside all of these ideas, and stuff like that. I'm not touting it that it's superior in any way or anything like that, but it's just like that's how I would see Buddhism as something that, yeah, and you see a lot in these, some of these Asian countries, like I live in Thailand, and that Buddhism here is like, yeah, everybody is happy in what they're doing. And if you kind of look at their government, the way their government works, it's a lot of just like, yes, you must do good in your spot, stay where you are, and you will have a better life later. So don't try to rise up, just stay where you are.
Oh yeah. Religion, any way you slice it, is typically the opiate of the masses. You know, it's just some mental construct that keeps us from actually demanding a better life in some regards, because this is the practice life. You know, this life is just the test for you to obey God or, you know, do what you're supposed to do or have good karma. And then you're going to get this great eternal life. It's right on the other side. And I mean, I do think we're eternal beings, but it's just some things are just twisted conveniently from the top down to manipulate the masses.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, any form of government, I think most forms of government anyways. Yeah.
Religions and governments just used to be like the same fucking thing.
Yeah. And it's, you know, you have your council of elders and these guys, for some reason, you know, they tell you they're closer to God than you are. And that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
For me, I think doesn't make any sense.
When you go back, everything seems split today. But when you go back, the nexus of religious powers and political powers and royalty and magic and banking are all basically under the same roofs. And it's just weird to see these banking priesthoods of ancient time. I think we still have that, but it's just the illusion of separateness. I mean, a lot of these people are in the same interlocking cabals, and they just kind of spiderweb out into their own areas of expertise, so to speak. But yeah, I think that there's a real nexus of all that stuff. Just the further you go back, it's interesting to see how connected it all really was.
Boys, and that was Zell and I are talking. Yeah, Zell and I were talking about the show.
A treat. This has been a treat listening to you guys fucking banter about this. And it's a treat for Andrew too. Andrew just walked in the door. He came in about halfway through that.
Yeah, I still don't even know what's going on.
No one does, man. No one does. We're all just here for the ride.
I'm just sitting here trying to Google everything you're saying.
We're all just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
No, that's you guys just took it to a whole new level there. That was fucking awesome.
Mind-boggling.
Well, Zell and I were talking before the show. We were talking about the difference between like most of these the symbols and things like that these cabals and things use are seem to be like mostly predominant in Western society. But I was wondering if you've seen them or you've talked to anybody where they've had it in Eastern society as well, or do they have their own workings? Like, is these kind of things, do they have influence over Chinese, like, you know, circles and the rise of the Chinese as an economic power? Do they have influence over that too? Or is that something else?
Good question,
man. I'd be guessing, but I think they do. I mean, clearly there's the symbolism. A lot of the symbolism you'll see crosses that barrier between East and West. I mean, the swastika was originally a Hindu symbol, I believe, an Indian symbol.
Mm-hmm. Like, and
they brought it back from Tibet as well, but yeah, it was a Hindu symbol, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, there is some crossing there, but I do find it just strange overall that there is such a wall between the East and the West, kind of. It almost seems like two different worlds. Like, it's easy for you to go your whole life and, like, almost have no context for what the hell goes on over in the East. You know, we just don't know all that much about it. It just seems like a strange and different culture. But I think behind the curtain, of course, all these people who are into the old religion or all this esoteric stuff, they have no prejudices about where to dig it up from, especially the older the source, the better. So, yeah, I think it's definitely in there to a degree. I think they incorporate anything they can that works.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds about right.
I feel drastically underprepared here. I'm like sitting here at home Googling
the story symbolism of my behind life, man.
the McDonald's logo, the symbolism in The Lion King, and here we are just.
Hey, man, it's filled with it
everywhere.
Okay, well, yeah, the McDonald's logo, even down to the colors, it's just all this stuff is, and it's getting worse in the technological age, but even before that, it was all these deep research societies that would figure out, these marketing agencies that would figure out exactly which colors affect us on a psychological level, because we're all just buttons and levers and pulleys. You know, we think we have all this free will, but we're so manipulatable. We were engineered that way, I think.
Obedient workers.
Exactly. And, you know, our culture is plenty willing to take advantage of that. And the McDonald's arches, the red and yellow, I mean, that's such a basic marketing thing. They apparently invoke hunger. And sure enough, the company who figured that out managed to dominate basically the entire world.
It's insane. Okay, so now let's talk about some symbols, because there's a few symbols that seem to just pop up everywhere. So one, like, first one I'll start with is the winged sun disk. So, you know, it's like a circle with like two wings going straight out. But then, yeah, then if you look,
that's the symbol for Ra, isn't it?
I don't know.
The Egyptian god Ra.
It I believe so. It's basically, I think, I think it's kind of a general symbol for enlightened consciousness. If you think of the sun disk as, you know, a rising consciousness, and the wings, of course, has a you know, motif of flying. But I had a guest recently who talked about the very same symbol and how the golden snitch in Harry Potter is exactly that. And it's a very Gnostic thing, the whole game of Quidditch in Harry Potter, because you got all these people running around the field trying to play this game on the surface, but there's a meta game. The real game is getting that golden snitch, and actually it's the only thing that matters in the game of Quidditch. And it's a big allegory for enlightenment. So I think that's what the sun disk meant then, and that's why it's in that movie.
Well, that whole movie is laced with, I guess, Gnostic. Like, when you look at Harry Potter himself, you know what I mean? He was resurrected. The hero was resurrected.
Oh yeah, just, it's like all Jesus. That Joseph Campbell stuff, all those archetypes. It's hard to believe that some,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's really hard to believe that she just came up with this stuff on the back of a napkin without being deeply indoctrinated into these mystery schools. She just seems to know too much, or she didn't really come up with all of it.
Yeah, I've heard about that too. Like, it's kind of far-fetched to believe that this downtrodden lady fresh out of divorce just wrote the greatest selling book of all time on napkins, you know, in a cafe. Yeah. It just doesn't.
I actually don't know the story.
Especially in her own lifetime. I mean, a lot of authors that have become popular. I mean, look at Herman Melville. I mean, look at Moby Dick, where it was like it sold what, maybe like 5 copies when he was actually alive, and then it didn't become really popular until after he was dead.
Dude, Edgar Allan Poe, you know? H.P. Lovecraft. Like, look at Ian Fleming, 007. Guy didn't even, I don't even think he lived to see one of his books turn into a movie.
And they just exploded.
You know what I mean? Like, it's, and her first, I'm pretty sure, I don't know for sure, but Harry Potter, I think, was that her first book?
I don't know.
I believe so. I mean, I definitely think there are gatekeepers, and anyone who reaches that highest level of success has been allowed to do so. And I just think the stories are too layered with too much esoteric symbolism for her to not be in the club, so to speak. And if she's in the club, then that's why she's successful, because they're like a fraternity and they promote their own.
So she's so did
they,
level 33.
Do you think that their system works where they wait first to see greatness, or they promote it, or do they do both? I'm not sure. Like, they're like, you know, did they reach out to her? Like, the first book became popular, and then they said, you know, they sent out like a recruiter or somebody and picked her up, or?
There's a lot of possibilities, but I mean, you've heard the phrase game recognizes game. It doesn't necessarily, they don't have to be in the same meetings to, you know, for some major publisher to see, to, you know, read that manuscript. First off, she's probably given the manuscript to read and then realizes it's full of all this stuff. And it's like, this person is in the club. There's so many winks and nods here. This will be something we promote. Or it's a way to mass indoctrinate people. So maybe this whole Harry Potter story was cooked up by a group of people, and it was, you know, they threw everything they had at it, and they wanted to subtly indoctrinate people through entertainment, because they do that. And then they just put a figurehead on it and gave it to this woman and said, oh, she wrote it.
Man, right. You always wonder. You see, like, okay, Harry Potter, it's a good book, but there's a million books like that, like fantasy books, right?
I mean, I read Harry Potter. I don't like Harry Potter.
No, but I'm saying, like, it's
blasphemy.
All of a sudden, just blows. It blows up into like a billion people love Harry Potter. A billion people, like, are obsessed with it. Like, seen all the movies. They've been to the movies. They've seen, read all the books.
Well, that book was like crack to me. I couldn't put them down.
Yeah,
I read the first four books, and I'm not a fan.
I'm fucking mainlining Harry Potter here.
We like what we're told to like.
Yes, no, it's very true. You think about it, like the biggest, I mean, the biggest franchises.
I'm still a Star Wars fan, and I know that has a bunch of symbolism and things in it, but it's like, it's. I still think it's a good movie. I even think the prequels have merit. But
oh, you bite your tongue.
I just went, I went to opening night
great.
Last night.
Episode 3 is great. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Spoilers. Oh, yeah, Darth Vader screaming no is just so captivating.
Just take that out, but the whole story behind it, his entire fall, which basically, you know, it mirrors Macbeth, which is one of my favorite Shakespeare plays. And it's like his fall and, it, you know, becoming, starting out great. Well, I think it was great. Which is Hamlet.
Anybody, has anybody here seen Hamlet. Episode 8 yet?
I've seen it too.
Not so yet. Watch it last
I don't want
night.
To say anything about it right now.
Two of my most trusted sources who never have ever agreed on anything Star Wars both hated it, and that scares me.
I'll be honest with you right now, no spoilers, but oh my God, did it fucking suck.
I went. Know what I did? Yeah. I fucking dressed up in a Jedi robe, so and I had a lightsaber, and I went to the thing. I was like, I'm going full nerd for this.
Me too.
I walked out in shame.
I had blue balls the entire movie. It was horrible.
Anyways, that's I could fucking talk about that for an hour. But. Okay, so
we're on
I just want to say we're on Wing Sundisk, and then I just wanted to say, like, then you start going to corporate logos, and you start going down the list, and you're like, what the fuck? You got Chrysler, Bentley, Aston Martin, Harley Davidson, Mini. Even Southwest Airlines has this, like, a very similar to this fucking Wing Sundisk. All the logos are kind of the same.
It was the Obama logo.
Yeah, for his campaign, right?
Yeah,
his 2008 campaign.
That, all kinds of Egyptian symbolism was invoked in that campaign marketing.
Why do they go back to why to Egypt? Why to that symbolism? Do you think?
I mean, that's a question I ask so many guests, and they never really have a full answer. If you're not indoctrinated, we're all on the outside looking in, but they definitely have some obsession. And I guess I just think maybe it's just an energetic thing. Like it's ripe with energy. It's just, it permeates. I don't know necessarily why or how, but maybe they're venerating them. Maybe they just latched on to things that work. Like there's a school of magic, you know, chaos magic is popular now. Mm-hmm. And that is basically the thought of just take what works. You don't necessarily need to get under the hood. You just need to know how to start the engine and hit the gas.
Yeah. Like you said, I think it's all based around that. Well, Egyptian society, civilization was around for thousands of years, and it was one of the first big widespread human civilization. So all of those symbols and things are ingrained in there, and the religion itself, or the mysticism, the symbols between it, have been rebooted so many times into modern society. They've been reinjected, and you know, Jesus is a form of Horus, and a lot of things like that. I just think, yeah, it just, like you said, it permeates all of society, and these symbols will reach you no matter what, whether you're a Christian or whether you're a Muslim or any of those Abrahamic faiths, which were based around Egyptian symbolism. It worked. So the people were like, well, if we got to control people, it's better to use stuff that they already know about. You know, people like that stuff. Nostalgia works.
Yeah. Well, just look at, I mean, look at Washington, D.C. The whole layout is just a giant occult playground. It seems like they were coming over here, they found this new landmass, and they're like, holy shit, let's throw everything we got at this. And they used to call it the New Atlantis. And it was this, I think America was this esotericist's project, this kind of occult project to see what could be done when you threw all this stuff into it. And the whole layout of Washington, D.C. is a pentagram. There's, of course, an obelisk there, which harkens back to Egypt, like we're talking about. Mm-hmm.
It's a pentagram, but it's like upside down, right? If you look from a map.
That's why none of the roads there work.
And the White House.
I would say the project was pretty.
No outlet.
I would say the project was pretty successful, though, wouldn't you? If you're trying to, invoke
power itself,
energy and power, right? I mean, it's the most powerful nation we've ever known of, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm kind of unfamiliar with. I just know the pentagram with the upside down with the top star pointing at the White House, the Lincoln Memorial, is that what it is? Not the Lincoln, the obelisk,
the Washington Monument.
Washington Monument.
The obelisk.
Mm-hmm.
And yes,
yeah, and then they're all laid out in that geometry. All Freemasons.
Yeah, it's true.
Leave it.
The Masonic temple's over there too. I mean, they got that big old Masonic temple over there. That place I always see. That place is huge.
Oh yeah.
it's really neat to see. Like, when I mean, I lived over there for, that's where I grew up, is near DC. So I've been in there a whole bunch of times. And I mean, DC itself is just like, it's, when you go there, you just feel different. It's strange. Like when you walk in, it just projects power, the way the layout of the buildings, like you walk around the Washington, the mall area, which like the area between the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Memorial. It's strange. Even you walk into the museums there, you walk into the Smithsonian, any of those places, and you feel like a type of energy that is just, it's not, I've never found in other museums and other places. Like I walk into the Natural History Museum and things like that, and it's just, you feel different. It's just strange.
If there's if there's one place I want to go in the world, I want to go into the basement of the Smithsonian and crack open all that shit.
Find some giants.
Yeah, for sure.
Or the British Museum, man. I can't believe how much they actually have on display in London. That was probably the craziest experience to me. I went out there, you know, just checking out Europe. And my buddy Gordon White, who hosts Rune Soup, he lived in London at the time. And so we got together and he was like, hey, before I get off work, you got time to go. You need to get in the British Museum. It's free and you get to see all the things that the Empire took from around the world. And when you put it in that context, I walked through there and I was like, holy shit, I've never been in a place like this. It was just pretty nuts. They even have like John Dee's scrying mirror on display. They have a skull that looks exactly like the Star Child skull. They have one of the Moy statues from Easter Island. Oh, they got cool. Everything there. The Egyptian room is just ridiculous to see. Crazy, crazy. If you're ever around there, it's kind of the only thing I would recommend in London.
Wow. It's kind of a dirty place. I'm gonna start saving up right now.
London.
I mean, I'm sure DC, I'm sure the museums down there have a lot too. I've never been. I hear it takes days and days to get through them. Yeah. But it's a lot of like, you know, Fonzie's leather jacket and stupid bullshit like that.
They have the American History Museum, which is kind of like that. That's just all nostalgia and stuff like that. I never really liked those ones. I mean, I was more of a natural history guy, and that's in the Smithsonian building itself. Like those are super cool. I would recommend those.
Hell yeah.
But going back to these, that the disc with the wings that you're talking about, like I can understand why these are used as advertisement, right? If it is true that this is supposed to symbolize enlightenment, you know what I mean? That makes sense to me.
It's inherent.
The things I don't get is like sneaking in all the Masonic satanic shit. You know what I mean? Like the 13s and everything everywhere. Like what is that?
13 and 33. And
yeah. Like where does that benefit you in your advertising?
Right.
You know what
very
I mean?
Very curious thing. And the term satanic, I tend to never use because I think it's so loaded, because we have such a history of the religious authorities condemning magic. And I think that's wrong, because I think magic is actually powerful and enlightening and helps the individual. And these structured, centralized religions are the things that kind of kept us from enlightenment. So when we have these ideas about certain things that we think are negative, like a number 13 or something, or a pentagram, for example, just general occulty symbols that people kind of think are scary, it's like maybe that's residue from all that religious propaganda. And maybe you're only thinking it's satanic because you're supposed to think of it as evil and you're not supposed to go there. But you are right that a lot of it does sneak into especially music videos and Hollywood films. I mean, even Hollywood, the whole term is based on the idea of a magician's wand and the whole idea of they used to be made of holly. Okay. And so a Hollywood is like literally a wand for spell casting. And Hollywood is just a big fantasy spell, just a big blanket over our consciousness.
And a bunch of pedophiles.
Yeah.
It is these days. I mean, you gonna sit down for a meal with Kevin Spacey? I'm not.
I liked him before. I thought he was hilarious. But then you hear the stories.
Yeah, I mean, you had to know some of this stuff. Yeah, I just checked. You had to know some of this stuff was coming. Like there was gonna be a time where we get inundated with social media, and that you can people find connections everywhere with these people, and everybody's lent a voice. I think that's the one positive thing, is people are lent a voice in this society now, and that these things were going to come out, because when you have that much power and influence, like these people like Weinstein and things like that, I think your mind just changes. I'm not justifying it, but I think that you think of the world differently and that you think you can do these things and get away with it. And that's, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Fuck yeah, best quote.
Cheers.
Well, people have been hinting towards this, making jokes like these things. This has all been subtly talked about before. And like whether it be stand up comedy acts or, you know, TV shows and stuff like that.
Everyone turned a blind eye.
Yeah. Like, but why now? Why is it all of a sudden? You know what I mean? Let's fucking tie these guys up. And you know what I mean? Like, I just.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Now? And yeah. I'm skeptical.
It's just all
if you're carefully bringing down all these people who might have been, you know, they could have been initiates or any of these secret cabal. I think maybe some of them.
Well, it seems carefully they have managed. Enough influence,
you know? Yeah.
That's what I would say is it just seems carefully managed. I'm really skeptical about anything, any big main story that hits all of our front pages when we wake up in the morning. I'm very skeptical of any of that being genuinely organic. So many things I think are really tightly controlled, especially when you're talking about a privileged class in Hollywood. I think you just really got to be careful about how you perceive these things and like getting swept away with them. I mean, I don't want anybody to be abused and you're like, yeah, fuck it, out with the pedophiles, of course. But I think it's probably very select pedophiles and some are probably still very much protected.
Okay. This is perfect. Yeah. Cause we had a question. Cause I said like, oh, we got you coming on the podcast and we'll take in some questions. And this guy, Hongva Lucero, he was saying the same thing. Do you think all these outings of sexual assault in Hollywood are the elite slowly unfolding before our eyes? Or is it all a sheet to cover something more sinister up? Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what he means by the question in the end, but is it like...
I'm going with a sheet.
So, like, they're exposing this because they're about to do something else. So it keeps you distracted from...
Get us distracted from what is it? From net neutrality when they were just taking that out. Like, that's probably...
Sorry, America.
You had to dig deep for that. Like that stuff didn't come up. That was on the back burner, most of it. But, you know, all of this sexual assault and they're passing a bunch of new laws, tax laws and things like that. I mean, this could have been part of that. But, you know, I'm not 100% sure.
Well, look who they're offering up too, right? Like, yeah, Kevin Spacey's a wicked actor, but you know what I mean?
He's just one guy.
Well, him and you know what I mean? Weinstein.
He also had a foundation for kids. That's another thing. You find that a lot of these people who are just so altruistic, all these philanthropists, most of their money is in the only reason they have these foundations or organizations is to do something nefarious or to funnel money and generate influence in a way that they couldn't just out of their own personal account. So I don't trust any of that shit. Bill Gates Foundation, Clinton Foundation, goddamn Kevin Spacey Foundation. School for Young Boys, whatever you want to call it.
Jeez.
I don't trust any of that shit.
What's Professor X up to then?
Gifted youngsters.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, now I got that image in my head. Thanks a lot. Just ruined X-Men for me.
Well, now it's going to be Disney now, so don't worry.
Yeah, Fox ruined X-Men.
Disney's got it now, so who knows?
Yeah.
What doesn't Disney have?
They have everything, man.
They own it.
Everything.
Just think about all the Masonic symbolism that's going to be in X-Men now.
Right.
Think about it.
What about, Greg, what do you think about
now?
People say, like, Walt Disney, if you break it down, like, because it's kind of like it's handwritten, so you kind of see 666 through it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fucking interesting, isn't it?
Like, there's a lot of stuff like that. You're like, you look at it, right? You're like, oh, there's nothing there. And then you look closer, and you're like, well, I guess that you could say that was a 666.
Well, what is Disney all about? Magic from the beginning. Wish upon a fucking star. It was child. They think it's like fantasy for kids, but a lot of it is magic indoctrination. And you know, look at the old the famous Fantasia.
I was gonna say the scariest movie I've ever watched.
Fucked me up when I was a kid. That and ET. I lost fucking sleep for months.
I just think it's hard to believe that the people who are making that stuff didn't have context for magic. And also, when you weigh in Disney's success and the kind of symbols they use, I'm not surprised. It seems like there is an equation there. I don't necessarily know how it works, but I think you can look at the companies that are most successful in almost every field see occult symbols and put two and two together.
Yep. Get on board with that for sure. Because you go through the list, and then there's like the vesica Pisces. Is that how you say it? It's like the Venn diagram kind of thing, two circles overlapping.
Yeah, right. That's one of those base shapes from sacred geometry. Yeah. You get all the way up to the tree of life and the flower of life.
Exactly. And then you have like companies like Chanel and Gucci and DC Shoes and MasterCard. They all use like that same symbol.
Yes, they do.
And you can go through like you probably go through like every occult symbol like that, and you would find companies who use that logo. Big multinational giant corporation companies who use like a derivative of some type of ancient occult symbol.
Yep. Just the biggest companies in their fields across the board have these symbols.
I'm sure like there is a section of advertising companies that they do this. Like, this is their job.
Absolutely.
You know, I could say Mad Men. Like, you look at Mad Men sometimes, and it's like there are people, not those guys who do the pitches, but there's these guys doing this research, sitting in a thing. And you're like, this works. Like, use this, like the colors that, you know, they're sitting there doing the research, and they'd be like, these colors will work. If you want your logo to be whatever, you should use this. If you want to project, what kind of image are you looking for? Okay. And they type it into a computer, and they just pull up all the stuff, and they're like, okay, this one, put it together. There you go.
Or, you know, you get a guy who's read The Lesser Keys of Solomon and been through the Enochian system, and he just decides to go into advertising and then use what he knows from his esoteric background. And then what do you know? He becomes the most successful marketer on the planet. I think that's kind of, yeah, obviously companies would then go to him, and he would invoke that very same symbolism in their logos. I don't know. I've never really done the serious deep dive into exactly who came up with these logos and if there's any real synergy there, but it would be an interesting thing to go into. A lot of them have cover stories though.
Yeah. A lot of them are, I know even in a lot of these symbols, like they project stuff that's either it's inside our, you know, our general overall consciousness, that thing that, you know, we're humans and we're basically biological entities. We're animals. We're 10,000 year old creatures working on, you know, 5 million year old brains. And there's things that are always going to be there, like the stars or the North Star, things like that. I mean, you look at Mitsubishi, it was formed by the three stars, things like that. These things always, if you want to project or you want to evoke a sense of discovery or things like that, you're going to use stars. I mean, look at NASA. Like, you want that. They have to do
fake
with space. But
NASA's fake. Man, flat Earth guy.
Fake NASA.
Hey, those guys are telling us all about fucking Disney.
They did warn us about Disney, the flat Earth guys, though.
Yeah, they did.
They did warn us. They're wrong. Wrong about everything else, but.
Well, I think the flat Earth people are interesting. I think it's
they make some interesting.
Yeah, some philosophical points about accepting things and taking things for granted, but I don't think the Earth is flat. I'm going to be controversial and say that I think space. I'm a space theorist. I'm coming out now.
We are too, and we don't hide it. We've had a few people on, and like we really explored for like 3 months. I fucking explored the flat Earth and just didn't.
Well, there are interesting things. Like, I don't want to say that there aren't. And Neil deGrasse Tyson. And another point is that we don't really have a picture of the Earth from space. And when Neil deGrasse Tyson was questioned on some of the issues with lighthouses being seen under the curvature of the Earth and the geometry not working out quite right, he said, oh, well, that's because the Earth is more pear-shaped, and so it's not a perfect marble. I'm like, well, where the fuck's that picture, Neil? Because every picture you've shown us is a perfect marble. So something's weird. There is something strange going on, and I think that it's not that the Earth is flat, but because there is so many sketchy things coming out of NASA, it leads people to the furthest conclusion. They're like, you know what? Fuck everything you've ever said. It's all bullshit. And I think that's that's very punk rock of them.
Hey,
it's so easy to go down that fucking YouTube rabbit hole.
You can go forever. Yeah.
Just in that little corner, it's like, this, suggest this video. And then I'm going to suggest this video next. And next thing you know, you've been fucking watching flat Earth videos for 45 minutes and you're just fucking, mind blown. Yeah.
We're not talking about flat Earth though. Like, we've done our part. We gave it a shot. We gave an avenue and, hey, if the Earth is flat, I would be like, oh, sorry.
Have they heard anything back from the guy from Texas who's going to launch himself in a homemade rocket?
He didn't do it. He didn't do it.
They shut him down.
That was all. Okay. That was all a marketing thing for him because he wants to be like evil. He wants to be an evil Knievel. He wants to do like he was a stuntman. That's what he is.
What a shame. I was really excited.
I kind of want him to get shot up there, and he'd be like, "I want 1,800 feet. Like I climbed 1,800 feet yesterday up the mountain."
I want to see Antarctica regardless. Like I think there's some crazy stuff about Antarctica as a Hollow Earth fan. Yeah. You look at some of the explorer reports in the north and south talking about warm seas and, you know, taking your jacket off and seeing greenery. I don't know where the truth lies, but I definitely would be interested to see a little bit more exploration of Antarctica. It's bigger than the United States. And think about how diverse the landscape of the United States is and just how many things could possibly be found there from a previous age. Cause I'm not convinced it was always ice.
Yeah. Well, soon enough it's melting. So they said it's melting faster than any time in recorded history, at least, or even from the ice samples that they've taken there. That's like, geologically it's melting faster than any other age before.
Bring it on.
Didn't they just find that Nazi base up in Antarctica? It was like a brand new discovery.
I don't know.
I don't remember. Honest.
Yeah.
No. They might have discovered something, but I highly doubt you could brand it a Nazi base. It might have. I think they found some ancient structures. I think there's a possibility that Nazis went there for sure. But I don't think they found a Nazi base, did they?
Remains of a petrified forest. I think they found remains of a forest up there that had been there. Thousands of years ago.
If they found a Nazi base in Antarctica tomorrow, 1,000 people would have told me about it today.
It could be some type of fake news.
It could have been fake news.
Yeah, you never know.
I think Antarctica, I'm on board with like the Graham Hancock style, like where like 12,000 years ago, the end of the last ice age, there was a cataclysm on this planet that altered the climate so drastically. Maybe even like, if you go with like the Charles Hapgood, like the Earth, like Earth crust displacement. Something happened 12,000 years ago, either an asteroid impact or something, where the entire global climate changed quickly, like super quick. And that's what like we've talked about before. Like I'm on board. Like I think these pyramids and shit were built before the Egyptians, and like all these, because there's pyramids all over the world. And like at the dawn of civilization, people have built these superstructures. Like man, there must have been someone more advanced before that got wiped out. And then the Egyptians came back and they're like, holy shit, these are sweet. Like, these are ours now. I'm Khufu. I'm putting my graffiti in here. This is my fucking pyramid, man.
What do you guys think the pyramids were for?
Well, you read a lot of things. You read power generation. You read, you know, but I think it's.
That's where they buried Apocalypse from X-Men. Right?
Oh, that's true. No, I think it was something to do with like frequency vibration, like some type of unlocking. Your mind almost, or like, you know what I mean? Because there's like, there was some stuff. I can't remember who the guy was, but he like put seeds in a pyramid and like the seeds grew better. So there's like some type of weird frequency thing, I think, with the pyramid. I think it was all something to do with sound. I don't know.
I think it could have been some sort of consciousness focus. Like you could be able to, something that people can look at. I mean, like they said, they used to be completely white. They used to be tipped with gold, like the entire, the top parts. And I would think that something in there, like if you had enough people focusing on one point at that point, I think some kind of something would happen.
Well,
I think it would lend you some kind of
the first types of pyramids that were made, like the step pyramids, you can see how those were made. You know what I mean? That makes sense. That looks doable.
No, but here's the thing with the pyramids, the step pyramids, when they date them, they think the step pyramids are after and they're shittier. So the very start of civilization, way back then, they built these giant megastructure pyramids, perfect, like super engineering marvels. And then the pyramids got worse and they got worse. It's like when people came back to the pyramids and they're like, holy fuck, that thing's sweet. Let's try and build one.
Have they been carbon dated?
You can't carbon date rock, right? So you can only find what's been buried by the rock.
Oh, okay.
You can start getting into rock, like you start testing for like magnesium and like chloride.
Yeah, you have to find an actual biological like substance to carbon date if it's something that's down there or something that contains carbon around it. But even then, it's like if you have sand that's all around it, the sand's constantly moving, so you can't really
this is where I like to go. I've gone down this rabbit hole before. And if you date these ancient structures, you look at the weathering on some of them, right? So you look at the weathering on the Sphinx, and it looks like it's been rained on and it's like completely destroyed. And then people like debunk it. They're like, oh man, that's just wind erosion. But when they found the Sphinx, it was completely buried, right? It's like the little head was poking out. So if it's completely buried, there's no wind. So they're saying like the erosion on the Giza Plateau and the Sphinx is from a time when it was wet, which would have been around the last ice age, they think, right? So it's just, everyone just think like the Egyptologists are always like, well, this is how it is. Like, we found Khufu's name in this pyramid. It's Khufu, Khafre, and Menkaure. Like, these are their pyramids, man. That's it. And they're like, well, maybe it's not. They're like, no, it is.
I thought the Sphinx was, I thought that was all wrecked from Napoleon. Didn't Napoleon shoot?
That was a myth.
That's a myth.
Was
it?
What the hell? Yeah, am I reading, like, am I subscribed to fucking tabloids or some shit?
Are you
like,
fucking on disclosed.tv?
Apparently.
You want disclosed.tv? Reading that bullshit?
No, they said that the nose fell off because Napoleon used it for target practice for one of his armies. And I'm pretty sure that's a myth.
No. Anyways, I can go. That's a whole nother rabbit hole, but
yeah, I think clearly they were either something related to consciousness, like my buddy Gordon White calls it an immortality machine, because if you've ever experienced psychedelics a lot, you can basically feel immortal, because you know the longer a trip can only can feel like it lasts a lifetime, and it only lasts a few minutes. So imagine doing that in some natural, well-defined way, you know, constantly, you could basically feel like it's an immortality machine. I think it's either that or a weapon, because man seems to only build weapons. And if you find pyramids all over the world, maybe it's a possible weapon of some kind. Joseph Farrell, another researcher I really like, his website is Giza Death Star, because basically that's the premise, is it's an ancient weaponry.
Hey, why not? At this point,
hey, why
they're,
not build
so
a,
well,
I mean, you wouldn't build something that big for no reason.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
I mean, those are polar opposite ideas, the ones I just basically said. It's either super positive or super negative. But it's just, it's about restoring the context of that time period. And it seems like back then, like we talked about earlier, people were a little more open to magic and psychedelics and journeying. It was like a bigger part of the overall culture. It's not necessarily that people were open to it. It's like their leaders actually like promoted self-discovery and enlightenment and transcendence. And this was part of life, was learning about it and forgetting about your fear of getting over your fear of death, because you've basically transcended matter multiple times since last Thursday. And, you know,
it was a lot more open to the idea of, you know, of a mental state beyond what you are now, and that people could, I think they were less, maybe at that point they were less conditioned, or like their brains were less, you know, shackled by what everything that we have now, that you're pretty much conditioned from birth. But back then, maybe you just had the raw, just the raw human psyche. It wasn't just this nice boxed up version that we have now. Like back then in the earliest days of humanity, it was probably something, it could have been something a little bit different. It's just that little bit that maybe there could have been magic, or there could have been just a telepathic bind that was something just a little bit more prominent than it is now. I'm not saying that the Egyptians were psychics or anything, but maybe there was a little bit more, it is a smaller gene pool, maybe. I don't know. Maybe things were more concentrated back then.
Well, there's a lot less distractions back then, I'd imagine.
That's true. You have a lot more time to concentrate on more like the mysteries inside your mind of meditation and things like that. I mean, really, you have less to do. Like, you don't have all this stuff. You know, well, you can sit there and stare at the stars for like 20 years and chart out like which everyone goes, because that's your TV, you know.
That's a really interesting thing to think about, because I have gone down the magic rabbit hole, and that's something you find is that it is very fucking difficult to do, actually. It's very involved in a lot of cases, and to do things directly out of the grimoires the way they're presented takes time and effort, and a lot of people just aren't going to do that. And our current culture is so ADD about things, like this internet culture is like, you know, on to the next thing, on to the next thing. Let's just watch YouTube videos, watch 40 in a row, and then forget what I even watched. I mean, what we're so throwaway. But at the same time, we actually have more time than ever if we were to use it wisely, because our basic needs are taken care of. Ancient Egyptians didn't have a dishwasher and a laundry machine and a microwave and a fast food drive-through and a taco shop down the block and a Target
that we know of.
Right. Basically, but these things, you know, they're out there spending all day trying to keep their shit together. And we kind of have a little more freedom and luxury in that regard, but we sure as hell aren't going to use that time to get into magic. I mean, why would you? It only works. It only improves your life tenfold or ruins it, depending on who you ask and what you do and what entities you talk to.
Well, I look at it this way. If Aleister Crowley couldn't do it, I couldn't do it. Not a chance. Not a chance.
That's the threshold right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Who knows what Crowley did and didn't do?
Well, he tried to do the Abramelin, was it?
Abramelin, yeah.
Abramelin. I think. He tried to perform the Abramelin.
He didn't complete it, man. No? He opened a fucking rift to a different dimension.
Mm-hmm.
That's where these aliens come from, some people say.
Right. How do we know he was unsuccessful?
Maybe. Well, he dedicated himself. Maybe he fucking did it. Maybe he actually got the magic down.
Well, I thought, like, how do we know? He said he didn't. He wasn't able to complete it.
He's a liar.
Look, if I opened a multidimensional portal and I didn't know how to get it closed, you bet your ass I'd tell you I failed.
Yeah, man, I couldn't do it, man. I couldn't get that shit open.
Wow.
Nope.
Sorry. And then he sold the house to Jimmy Page.
And how else do you think right. Stairway to Heaven got written, right?
It's true.
Right.
Both no one can write a song like that.
No.
In the immortal words of Shaggy, it wasn't me.
It's like, but by the by, you might want to put some stock into literature about Shoggoth, our supreme overlord from the Garden of the Abyss. You might want to brush up on some of that, but you know.
Man, it's crazy. It's crazy when you think back at like these ancient cultures and then they were so good at doing things. Because like...
Oh, yeah.
I was just reading something the other day. There was an Olympic team. I can't remember what country from. They tried to like match a Greek rowing team from back in the day. They found like this... a record from the Greeks back in the day. They could row one of their ships and they could row it at like 10 knots for 20 hours. And that was like a written scripture. And then so this Olympic team, they're like, okay, we're going to try and do it. And they trained for a fucking month. And they were already Olympic rowers. Like they're already like top rowers. They can only do the same amount of knots for like 2 hours. And they are trained. Hmm. So like these people back in the day, they would only do one thing their whole life. So they get so fucking good at it.
So not to mention they're probably getting whipped while they were doing it, so a little extra boost there.
I think the slave portion of that era, I think that's a little. I don't believe in that. I don't believe the pyramids were built by slaves or anything like that. But
They're paid workers. They were actually paid. Most of them were. A majority of them were paid workers. They have the actual records. They found that they were these. Most of them were paid laborers that worked on the pyramids.
Yeah, I definitely got bored of that because no one could build up something that precise if you're like. Paid just or like you're like whipped to do it, like you're never gonna, like you just couldn't do it. You could never,
that makes sense,
right? So like these ancient cultures, if you go back to like, so if you're like a magician in the ancient days, that's all you did, like day in day out, you read the scriptures, you practiced, you meditated, you tried to do it. But like nowadays, like people read a book or they write a book, but no one really dedicates an entire life that I know of to trying to do this stuff.
Well, because you're 9 to 5, you're working at 7-Eleven, then you get home and then you get time to practice your meditation.
You're trapped in the grind, right? Yeah. You can't just like sit down and just like sit on a stone, cross your legs and meditate and try and levitate or something. You can't do that.
I like that. Nice.
No, if you haven't seen it, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little Star Wars poke there.
Yeah.
Damn. But anyways, I think I had some questions here. Someone say something while I pull up these questions. I had some questions for Greg there, but then my
fill the time.
Someone fill the time because Pat, I fucked it up.
Go,
Dan, say something smart.
I can't remember what we were talking about now. Yeah, okay.
We've gone everywhere.
Yeah, back then during the time, like we said, like these people weren't. People didn't have all the technology, all the throwaway culture and, you know, constantly shifting from, you know, we can multitask now more than ever. Our brains are kind of wired that way now, which is kind of neat. But back then, like you could concentrate on a task, you know, wholly. And that would, you know, it increases the way that you take things in and you could do a lot of things. I mean, you look at some of the leaders back then, even like Benjamin Franklin or Thomas Jefferson. Yeah, these guys were, some of them are kind of shitbags, but they, you know, you could speak like 5 different languages and that was kind of normal. Like back then, like you could speak English and French and Spanish. And it was that's like, if you didn't speak those languages, you were dumb. You know, and you get some people now, it's like, well, just speak English. Like that's the only thing you should speak. And I'm like, I don't know.
Seems like we're definitely devolving to a degree. Read some Shakespeare and try to figure that out, you know?
Shakespeare is amazing. Macbeth is still my favorite play, and I still think a lot of things, like I said, episode 3 of Star Wars, I think, is the best one, because that's the fall. You watch it a few times and you're like, okay, this I think it's good. Yes, the ending is very bad, but if you just kind of like leave out the no part, I think the rest of it's fine. I think it's super cool. It's just like you see Anakin or Darth Vader, like he was at that time. You can see just he is raw emotion, and people put like hate on Hayden Christensen, but I still think that he's playing a distressed teenager. Yeah, he's a bitch, but I mean, come on. Like he grew up without a, you know, he didn't have a dad, and he's just angry all the time. And he's a teenager. Like he was still then, he was still wasn't that old. He's still kind of emotionally stunted. And that's the only way that you get this kind of this transformation, is something was, you know, inherently wrong with them, and you bring that out. And I think it was okay. Like, I still think it's good.
I just cannot agree with your prequel apologist views.
And I totally respect that. I mean, okay, I don't like episode one, garbage. Episode two, garbage.
How do you guys feel about the theory that Jar Jar Binks was supposed to be a Sith Lord, but George Lucas overplayed his hand by making him such a doofus, and then he pussed out when he got all the bad feedback? Yeah. Oh.
I don't know about that.
I don't even think about Jar Jar Binks.
Who was the Phantom Menace if it wasn't him?
It was him, though, but it was just that kind of like that. I thought it was like that kind of overarching. There is something that's going to happen. You know,
I think they shoehorned Dooku in there because he pussed out, and it was supposed, you know, I think he was supposed to be the counter to Yoda, but he just was lame.
I think my whole view is that the prophecy that Yoda had about Darth Vader bringing, or Anakin bringing, balance to the Force is true. I think that Darth Vader did bring balance to the Force by killing all the Jedi. I think that because it was so out of balance, like because you need both balance. The Force is about balance, having light and dark. And I think that the Jedi had become too predominant, too powerful, and like the Emperor said, they'd become too bloated in bureaucracy and things like that. I think he did bring balance to the Force. I think it was just that's what had to happen.
Well, like, because right, there can only be a Sith Lord and his apprentice, right? There can't be anybody else.
There can
only
be two. Yeah.
Yeah, there can only be two. Yeah. So, you know what I mean? There you go. You got odd numbers. Way too many Jedis.
I think one of the books, or a previous Jedi had said that the Force is neither good nor bad. It's just energy. It's a way, and the midichlorians just allow people to tap into that energy more than others. And it's not good or bad. Energy is neither good nor bad. It's just there's energy,
right?
And you can't harness it. If you try to harness it in one way, it will push back at you. And that's what the Jedi thought they were doing good, but you're actually just, you're increasing the imbalance. The more Jedi they are, that it's the Force is going to push back to even it out. And I think Darth Vader was that, because he was made from midichlorians, which are all Force sensitive, which are these Force organisms or whatever. And he was composed completely of that. So he was the downfall of the Jedi, but he was also the balance of the Force. He was that, you know, irresistible force that had to bring balance. That's what I think.
And if you've never seen Star Wars, you missed.
Climb out of that rock.
Case file 55. Star Wars talk with Greg Carlwood. I was reading through the questions, and we covered them all. There's a couple that I could go through, but you're going to lead us down another rabbit hole. So let's just do a quick. So we haven't covered it yet, but we've talked about it. Is Bohemian Grove? They worship, or they do like a mock sacrifice in front of this owl named Moloch. Is that correct, Greg?
Well, that is one interpretation. Obviously, that it does happen, but I've heard from other people that it's actually Mithras. But the problem is that I've always heard of Mithras as a bull. And then I've also heard Moloch. I've seen Moloch depicted as a bull. So it's just weird. I think that when that came out, it was actually Alex Jones who filmed it.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure how I feel about Alex Jones. And so I'm also not so sure about how I feel about that earliest interpretation. But they definitely are doing some weird shit in the woods that they don't like to talk about.
You can't go there. You can't get in unless you sneak in, I guess, like he did. Was it probably 15 years ago or something?
Sorry, was that Moloch you said?
Moloch.
That's the bad guy from Watchmen.
Is it?
Alan Moore. Yeah, that guy, he dumps yeah, but they so much fucking
they probably got that symbolism. From somewhere else.
No, I guarantee. Buddy, Alan Moore is all about occult symbolism. Like, so look at Watchmen, the whole thing. It's laced with it.
Right.
Ozymandias dies.
Ozymandias, yep.
Yeah. Dr. Manhattan.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Dr. Manhattan is a fascinating character. Basically, the God form. Well, the enlightened man. The Christ consciousness.
Oh, man. If you haven't read Watchmen or seen it, or, you know, do both. There's a series coming out, too. It's fucking awesome.
Okay, I got a question here. I don't know if anyone's going to know the answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. From on Twitter, Politrix as usual. Have there ever been any alien encounters that specific to occult Cutler? What? To specify any occult magic stories that are better understood through the context of alien/UFO life. So is there any connections, I guess, through the UFO phenomenon and occult?
Well, I've interviewed some guests who have made the case that we've been kind of deceived with the whole alien motif, and that what we're really dealing with are demons. But people know that demons are negative, nefarious entities, and so they're not going to go along with that. But if you wrap them in a different package and you call them space aliens, then all of a sudden you can make the case that maybe our space brothers have something to warn us about, and they're just here to tell us to stop wrecking our planet, and, you know, they really love us. It's kind of a bait and switch, and there is that perspective, because you can go back even to fairy lore, Celtic fairy lore, and find that the motif is almost exactly the same. Visitors who come in the night, and they, back then, they were taking children and taking them underground, and a lot of it has to do with genetics, which also in the alien motif, a lot of people say they've been taken so that they could make hybrids. It's always often about offspring and children, and the stories are pretty similar. And so I think that we're experiencing something very strange, and we have these cultural wrappers that we put it in. They used to say fairies. Now we say aliens. At different periods of time, they've said spirits and demons. But I think there's just other forms of consciousness. And just because space aliens tell you they're from space before they jam a rod up your dick doesn't mean you can trust them.
That's well put.
Maybe they're coming from inside the Earth. Maybe they're remnants of a previous civilization far beyond our own sophistication, and they only come up to the surface world to experiment on us, like we do to basically every other animal.
No, that's a good point, because, like, we've theorized all about aliens before, and you say, like, okay, if you're coming here to warn us, and, like, oh, don't do this to your planet, no nuclear weapons, all this stuff, like, and you're that intelligent, can you not somehow communicate to that? Like, that to us? Do you have to go through a government, and the government stifles it up? Or are you actually a nefarious being, and you go to the government, and they're like, okay, yeah, we're with you.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, like, we're on board with that. We'll help you that way. So we'll just, like, we'll bury your existence in the layers and layers of secrecy, and no one will ever know the exact truth. So it's just speculation forever.
Right.
It's well put.
I would recommend there's a guy, Chris Knowles. I've had him on the podcast a few times. He runs secretsun.blogspot.com. He wrote a series called Lucifer's Technologies that is all about a big chapter of it is about the idea that Roswell was not an alien craft. It was an occult ritual done in the desert, and that they needed a cover story for it. And that when you do these occult rituals, you are given ideas for technology. Some people think that the Knights Templar were so successful with their banking practices because they were doing rituals and making offerings to Baphomet, who in turn taught them about fractional reserve banking, and we're all just blind to it, and you just make wealth out of nothing. We know that economies at those high levels are based on just manipulating numbers on a screen. It is magic. So this idea that you can perform a ritual contact some multidimensional being and be given real technology is kind of something that I think is pretty sound. And he goes into the fact that if you go back to, the old text, like, I'm not sure if it's a Sumerian story per se, but the myth of Cadmus is what it is. And Cadmus, he has a story where he goes into the well of Mars. It's like he crashes into the well of Mars on a fiery rock. And so Mars is the red planet, Roswell, Rosewell, well of Mars, Cadmus crashing in a fiery rock. Like, the motif of Roswell is based on an ancient myth. And that's what you find is these people, these elite, are obsessed with these ancient myths and making them manifest. It's like what they try to do. So you have this Roswell working, as he calls it, out in the desert. And then you're given technology from some dark entities, possibly the transistor, because that's what they say. And then you put out a guy like Philip Corso, who spins this tale that he was working on a craft and reverse engineered the transistor. Well, you look at the history of the transistor, and it's surprisingly bare. And you'd think that for something that all our modern technology is based on, we would have a very detailed history of how it came to be.
Yeah.
But if it was given to us through a magical working in the desert, then we probably wouldn't have that story. And there's a case to be made that most technology or little pieces of it come from the other side, and they don't want to tell us that. That's why I think that science and the occult are so linked with that stuff, like that Jack Parsons story from earlier. Why are these people so obsessed with the occult? Because they're getting information from it, I think. And this esoteric knowledge actually reflects itself in their science. It's very weird, but I don't know. I think that's happening.
Man,
that type of divine inspiration thing is a good point. I think that's you. But you have people like, you do have examples like Nikola Tesla. I mean, he even claimed some of his things came from divine inspiration, or he saw the picture for the perfect either circuit or generator in his mind. It just appeared to him out of light, and that these things can happen. But I mean, look at him. He died penniless and alone. And yeah. Do you think mostly because, you know, people wanted to make money, as none of his things, he wanted to give free energy, or at least not have to charge as much for it.
Right. And I'm sure you could get different types of technologies from different possible communications with entities. But if we did get technology from demons, how would you expect it to manifest? You'd think it would be this kind of thing that everybody would be really addicted to and in love with and think of as the savior of mankind, yet it's slowly enslaving us. And that, I think, is actually a great definition for modern technology.
That's true.
I mean, the mark of the beast is the goddamn iPhone.
100%. I was going to ask you, mark of the beast comes up a lot, and some people say it's like RFID chips or the smartphone or like a future tattoo everyone's going to get. So you're saying that the mark of the beast is, because you have to willingly accept the mark of the beast, right?
It's already in your pocket.
Yeah. So you go to the store, you're like, okay, you go to your provider, like, I need a phone. They're like, all right, we got this iPhone 8 or i9 or X or whatever it is. You want it? Like, yep, I'll take that. You grab it. It scans your face, takes your fingerprint. There you go. You're willingly submitted to the mark of the beast.
I'm going back to flip phone.
Yeah, back to flip phone.
That's why I have an HTC.
It's all the same, buddy. All the same. Huh. Crazy, man. This is like it's a rabbit hole you can just go down forever, right? Everything just unlocks a whole new fucking set of topics you can just talk about forever.
But exactly. And then there's infinite perspectives on those topics, so it never ends.
Yeah, like the one thing I come across with stuff, and you're like, okay, if there is like a cabal and like there's a secret society of like a small group of people that own most of the wealth and most of the corporations, I feel like they almost think that they have to let people know just a little bit. So like, okay, we're going to do this. We want to do this. So we're going to have to give people like just a little symbolism or just a little something. Just like that's part of like the universal law. You have to put it out there. Like, all right, we're going to do it. So here's like just a little, let's give you just a, you know, poke it out there. Some people are like, oh, this is what they're doing. But most people are like, no, that's bullshit. Like you're a fucking crazy conspiracy guy. You're like, what? And there's like, oh, I put it out there and now we're going to do it. Right. That's kind of what I think, how these people get away with it. They're like, they tell people just enough so they know people know they're going to do it, and then they just do it, but they own the media, They own the military. Like, they own all the stuff, right? If you talk about a global cabal, the bankers, right? It's all about the bank. Like, the banks own everything. They own the corporations. The corporations are in debt to the banks. The military is in debt to the corporations to make the weapons. And it's just like a big old... It's a small club, and you're not in it, pretty much. Is that kind of how you go, like, kind of like how you think about it, or?
Absolutely. Cheers, indeed. I'm right there with you.
All right, because like it's so hard. You can never like, with these topics, you can never like say like who is doing it or who's not doing it. It's just like you know something slimy is happening. You just know. You look around the world, you're like, man, it's, like you just watch the news or read the news, and you're like, it's all like negative and fear mongering and war mongering. Like, and then if you look on the alternative side, there's a lot of good stuff happening all the time, which no one ever hears about. No one hears about new technology. No one hears about good stuff, new cures and new power sources and all this stuff. No one hears about that. All you hear about is bullshit celebrities or a couple of the wars that America's involved in, even though they're probably in like 40 or 50 countries. You only hear like one or two countries, right? It's like a weird. Something's weird. Something weird's going on. I think everyone can agree, like, something's not right. The system is not fully broken. It's just been, like, hijacked by a group of, like, super wealthy people who own most of the money and the corporations and the minerals and the resources and the food. Yeah, it's insane.
Oh, yeah. They're bringing the ship down, I think. We'll see.
What do you think the end game is for them? Is it really the new world order, like, one world everything? Like, they control everything you do? Or what do you think is the end game for them?
Well, I think at one time it was a real, like, tangible, literal one world government. But now I just think they're going to do it digitally.
Right.
I mean, we're already there. Most of the traffic, 90% of the web traffic is going to Facebook, Twitter, Google, Netflix, Hulu. And that's pretty much it. And so everybody's up in arms about net neutrality. And it's like, what net neutrality? All these companies have crushed voices that they don't like. So what net neutrality? I don't know where it is, because I feel like it's already dominated by a few people. We'll see.
Well, now it was dominated by those people, but now they're going to have like ultimate control. Right now, you're only going to see that.
They don't already?
Yeah. I think the big thing is the deregulation, is that now that internet is not considered a utility anymore and can't be regulated by the federal government, now they can pretty much charge you for whatever they want. Their prices aren't set. So it's like they can just do whatever they want for internet. Like, it's,
well, there's a case to be made, though, that if you think of it like cable packages, what we're talking about is we used to be forced to have 150 channels of bullshit and get paid one fee. But then think about it, if you could do it a la carte and only buy the three channels you wanted for a lower price. There's an argument that libertarians are making that it's actually the system we've had that has propped up the telecommunications companies and the cable companies to create the monopoly cartel that they have right now. And that if they free that up, their pricing structures might change and they might suck, but it also allows smaller companies that couldn't get in the game before to now get in the game and offer more unique, more niche services. I don't know, but I just think that most issues are more complex than
100%.
A yes or a no. And I think that we're led around by the nose a lot. And whenever I see 90% of people worried about something, I'm pretty sure they've been manipulated and that they don't really know what is beneath the first surface layer that's there. I think net neutrality is a buzzword. It was fun to get upset about. But, I mean, we'll see what it really means.
Hey, man, that's...
I don't think they did anything good for us.
No, anytime there's a decision like that, it only benefits the people who make all the money.
Right.
It might not affect the people at the bottom as much, but maybe it goes up a little bit, maybe their price goes down a little bit, $5-$10.
They're still making more money.
But the people at the top, the people who made the decision is benefited for them. Like, they're not going to make that decision to benefit everyone else. And publicly traded companies, no one's ever going to make a decision that decreases your value of your company.
They didn't pay $62 million in lobbying fees for nothing. Yeah. Like, they're not to make a profit off of it.
It's also worth pointing out that the internet was a deep state military weapon from the beginning. Yeah. So when people go out in the streets and protest about their rights they think they have on the internet, you should really reconsider what it was designed to do, which is collect your data and surveil you. And it's doing that. It's doing its job very well, and it's going to continue to do that job. And I think that when you start protesting about how you think that the military's weapon should be used, you're not going to win that argument.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of things that, you know, started out as military power. I mean, even nuclear power itself, which everything. Is like, oh, any of those things. It's like, well, we built a bomb with it first. Like,
yeah,
right. That's the first thing we did with it.
Always weaponized.
It's always weaponized first, for sure. Anyways, Greg, I think you gave us more time than you said you're going to give us anyway. So where can the people find you, and how can they get in touch with you and listen? Because I know you have a podcast, and you have a bonus podcast. If they pay a little bit of money, you can get a second hour for free or something, right?
Yeah, so I'm not in love with that model. We do see it a lot, but there's really only two ways for podcasts to survive: advertising and some type of premium membership. And I'm never going to do advertising, especially with this type of content. So we opted for the other model. And I do two-hour interviews with people that I consider to be interesting in the conspiratorial, paranormal, esoteric, occult realms, anything fringe, basically. And we get pretty deep into their work, as deep as I can in 2 hours. And the first hour is free. And the second hour is $5 a month for 5 shows a month. I think it's pretty simple that way. I try to keep that price pretty low. But, you know, that's the way it works. And it's called The Higher Side Chats. You can find it at thehighersidechats.com. The premium version is called The Higher Side Chats Plus. And I also have a small t-shirt company of designs that are based off of the episodes. And that's really fun because some of the episodes are quite deep. And so the artists I've got are amazing. They do such great work, and they're listeners of the show. So they throw in things that I didn't even think of. And they're just pretty cool if you're into conspiracy and the occult, because you just don't see a lot of deep level art that I actually think is also fashionable, not to use a lame term, but, you know, it's a lot of times it looks like you got that shirt at a flea market with that UFO on it or something. Like, this stuff is actually stuff I like. So I'm actually proud of that too. And that's The Higher Side Clothing. So it's basically my life in a nutshell.
Hey man, you've had like some of the best conspiracy, like best, not, I want to say conspiracy, cause that's kind of a loaded term sometimes. You had the best like alternative media guests on your podcast I've ever heard. They're talking about topics all over the place, and you do it in a way where it's just like, it's super easy to listen to. No one's yelling or shouting or arguing. It's just like, here's my points. And then after the episode, you kind of like, sometimes you say like, eh, somebody like, yeah, man, this guy he knows his shit. So like for all our listeners, like, you guys know us. We don't know a lot. We drink a lot of beer, and we love the topics. But if you want to hear people who actually like spend their lifetime researching this stuff, you go check out The Higher Side Chats, because every week, 5 times a month, this guy's got someone new on, and they're always good. There's never a dud.
It's also got the greatest intro song I've ever heard.
Oh, man. Like, so none. Fucking good, man.
It's the best, by far.
Appreciate that. Yeah. And I get a lot of polarized opinions on that theme song.
I love it.
You write the lyrics to those, because you always have, like, you take like parodies of songs. You're kind of like the conspiracy version of, Weird Al.
Yeah. I'll take that. I've always loved comedy and parody music in particular. I know it sometimes can be lame, but I've just always liked it. And so, yeah, I hire artists, because what happened initially is I just used to like to end the show with songs that I liked that kind of encapsulated the episode in some way, or thematically or tonally kind of capped it off. And then YouTube, which is really only 5% of the audience, I don't know why I let it dictate what I do so much, but they started hitting me with all these copyright strikes for these songs. And so I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna have to get cover artists to do these songs for me. And then I was like, well, if I'm already gonna get a cover artist to do it, I might as well make these lyrics about conspiracy. And so that's how it started happening. And I've done more and more and more of them. And some of them are pretty good, because the singers are good, and they do a good job.
They're hilarious.
Man, so good.
It's cool.
It's great.
I appreciate it.
It's better than I do on my little keyboard in here. So,
hey, I can't do shit musically, so be happy.
Ron and Greg, we appreciate you coming on, giving us a little intro. We went to like a whole bunch of topics, as I said, we was like, that's how the show is. We never really, we have a topic and then it always veers off. So
got ADD pretty hard.
The show has got ADD and it can't take drugs. So we do what we can.
Right on.
So,
well,
yeah.
Thanks for having me, guys.
We will push all our listeners to your show because we don't put enough episodes and people are always yelling at us. So we'll send them your way because that'll fill them in between our case files here.
Right on. You're the best.
Okay. Hey, appreciate it, Greg. We will talk to you soon and hopefully we can have you back on sometime.
You got it.
You're
take care, guys.
Wealth of conspiracy right knowledge.
Take it easy.
Rock on.
Peace, brother. All right. Fucking Greg Carlwood, everybody. Guy's a fucking champion.
Guy's a genius.
He knows what he's talking about, man.
Yeah, he's real good. And he's real good on the mic. And just like, yeah, he's got a lot of good ideas. And he just knows how to talk about them. And it's pretty neat.
He could be on the show full time if he didn't have his own professional podcast.
Oh, easy. No, it was really nice to sit back and just listen to you, Dan, and him talk. Like, fucking awesome.
Because I fucked up. What happened is I told Andrew 8. But I told Greg 7 like a long time ago. And then Andrew's like, I was like, when you come? He's like, it's 8, right? I was like, nope, it's 7. He's like, fuck. So he's flying on his way. So I was just sitting here listening to Dan and Greg just fucking talk about religion and Buddhism and stuff. Like, this is awesome.
Yeah, I just hopped off the fucking treadmill. I've been sitting here for like an hour and a bit marinating. I haven't even had a shower yet. It feels disgusting.
I can't smell you, so you're good.
Oh, really? I'm impressed. That's good.
I have a little bit of plug nose. So.
There, that's it then. Because I can smell myself and it's disgusting.
If you could smell him, you'd be dead.
Fucking gross.
I'm going to come back here in the morning. It's just going to be a lingering odor.
Just like throw up as soon as you walk in the door.
Anyways,
burn that chair.
That was it's cool to have that guy on. His podcast is way bigger than ours, so he did us a favor coming on.
Yeah, his podcast is cool. He's got a bunch of published authors on there. I mean, I know it's not like super hard to get published these days, but like he's got some really good people on there that know their stuff.
He's
like,
had people on there who on any topic you can think of, he's had them on this podcast.
Did you reach out to him? Is that what happened?
Well, yeah, people kept on Twitter saying like, oh, you should do a podcast with, and they always tagged this podcast at Higher Side Chats.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, yeah, man, if like the big conspiracy fish swim with the little conspiracy fish, like we're in.
Yeah.
He's like, yep. I was like, all right, sweet.
Do you think he's ever like, has he ever listened to the podcast?
Oh, he asked him.
He said he did.
He listened to a couple just to get the feel of it, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm sure you wouldn't come in here and just like never listen to us and, you know, listen to a couple and make sure we're not a bunch of, assholes.
I gave him a good description. I was like, listen, man, we're the entry level to conspiracies and aliens. We like to drink beer. I like to smoke weed, and we just like to have a good time and talk and bullshit and laugh and make the topics not sound so boring. He's like, that sounds right up my alley. I'm like, yeah, all right, sweet. And he's super busy, so like to him come on a Friday night.
Yeah, that was
sweet.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was really
cool. That was cool.
Like I had like a list of occult topics, and we just like jumped all around everything. Like it's a huge topic. Like occultism in like modern times.
Yeah, that was fun.
I'll be honest.
I had a good time talking to him.
I'm really happy the way it went. Cause like I was trying to do my research, right? It was a little bit
it's hard to nail it down, right?
And it sucked. It was boring.
There's so much.
Oh, McDonald's is 13 and Arby's is 13. Like who gives a shit?
Oh, I love Arby's.
Lots of sticks.
Hey, you ever seen how Arby's meat is made?
Ugh. It's like liquefied.
It's liquefied. And then it's baked and then solidified when it bakes. It's disgusting.
Dude, I would eat if they could make a protein, like they called it a protein patty, and it tasted like meat. I would still eat it. Like,
I would still eat it.
I'm all for like if food came in a toothpaste thing. I'd still eat it. Yeah, be like whatever.
Hey, it's food.
Dude, I ate military food for like 4 years. Like,
it is food, right?
Food is food. It just goes in my mouth and fills my stomach. Gives me energy. It all comes as poop later anyways.
Hey, it all gets smashed in there and it's all good. Anyways, anything else you guys got to talk about?
I liked your apocalypse poll there. That was pretty
little
cool.
Apocalypse poll.
I like that. I enjoyed that.
What?
Your little apocalypse poll when you're like, why are the pyramids there? Oh, to bury the apocalypse. That was hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I just watched that movie. I'd never watched that movie. I watched it last weekend. And
Really?
Yeah. I'd never seen it. I watched all three. I think I watched three X-Men movie. The ones I hadn't seen. I watched, what was the one? I watched Days of Future Past. I hadn't
seen
before.
That's the best one.
And then I watched Apocalypse, right? Those two. I watched those two. And I was still like, why did I watch these? Apocalypse was cool. It started out. The beginning was super neat.
So
and then
cool.
The rest of it was like, this is dumb.
What is happening?
They
Psylocke has two lines.
They shit the bed. They shit the bed hard.
What's happening?
I don't know.
Anyways, I think we're gonna go after hours here. We got some prolapsers waiting to talk to us. But Neat. What I'm not gonna read any 5-star reviews today. We didn't have Braden. He's working. He couldn't make it. And it was the only day we could get Greg, so we couldn't.
Is he gonna talk about the secret? I gotta message him if he's gonna talk about the secret project tomorrow.
You're gonna be
super secret.
You're gonna be super bummed if I fuck off. I haven't eaten yet.
It's all good, buddy.
I'm getting hyped. No,
but what I got to do? I keep forgetting. We had some new Patreon supporters on the show, so I gotta give these guys a shout out. These guys are making the show go around. No ads on the show. It's free for us. Now it's a free show for us to do because of all you guys supporting.
That's awesome. Neat.
And so I'm going to go through the top here. Our top tier supporters are certified alien theorists. We got Kyle Jones, Graham Ashcroft, and Drew Baca, which you heard on Case File 40. Was it 42? Simulation Hypothesis. And Ron Pond approved. We got Adam Fairfield, Justin Reeser, Christopher Stutz, and Johnny Kuhn. And then this is $10 award is your Ron Pond approved. We got Ryan Verlardo, James Shepard, Jordan Corey Hines, Zach Deisinger. This guy's been fucking grinding our gears because we keep forgetting to say his name, so that's our bad. You're the man. Kane Barrett, Ray Dizzle, Chris Ayola, Elaine Trombley, Joel Dunham, Taylor Schmidt, Cole Berry. The man who made Mr. Conspiracy's Power Hour theme song.
Fucking love me some Colberry.
If you want Zell to correctly pronounce your name, you should have sent him a phonetic spelling beforehand.
Yes, you should. You should know us by now. If you like, I can't pronounce shit, so that's Canadian. That's a Canadian way. Like, it's a different accent up here. Like,
Colberry's band's playing tomorrow night. By the way,
where?
I think it's it's downtown at a hole. I'll text you the.
Maybe I'll go.
Yeah,
it's downtown in
fucking,
a hole.
They fucking
it's playing in a hole.
Shred.
Hall. They rented a hall.
Probably know the hall you're talking about.
They fucking shred.
Anyways, we had Colberry, we had Sarah Jones, Mike Rutledge. Those are our $10 supporters. And our biggest group of supporters are the $5 a month, which gets you early access to all Case Files and all bonus material. Tiffany Donahue, Audrey Nadio, Jeffrey Wilcoxon, Sean Smith, Angela Lamberto, Josh Hilton, Alexander Fuentes, Gabriella Wertherspoon, AJ Rothett, Mike Lupe, just Sterling, one name, great. Gary Smith, Emily Tully, Alex Richmond, Emily Scordao, Jeremiah Parrish, Aria Arbego, Miranda Medina, Catherine Murdoch, Blake Edward, Dan Mansbridge. We got Scary Canary, Stephen Fallon, Allison Abril, Miranda Palacano, Brock Masters. You know what's up. You've been around for a while. Colin Malone, Aaron Armador, Kyle James, and then $1 a month, the Beer Fund, keeping us a little bit drunk every episode. We got our SoCal Chorus Ron Pondent. That's the best name.
Yeah.
Tyler Weiss, Cody Reinerson, Justin Arnaz, Nolan Hansen, Stephen Scott, Jennifer Morris, Dale Peters, Sabrina Moon, Alex K, Dominic Bodkin, Will DeRocher. He actually started a podcast, and I'm going to be on it actually pretty soon. I'll let you more information about it. John Trump, Madison Elliott, and we have one person who donates a dollar a month, but they didn't choose any reward for some reason. Linda Clark, choose the reward. Come on, Linda.
You deserve it, Linda.
You deserve a reward.
You do.
Treat yourself
to at least a dollar. You're still included in the beer fund, but you never selected it when you signed up for whatever reason. And I do have Azel's prolapser of the month, or not of the month, of the week. And unfortunately, it's kind of a sad one, but she's our friend. She is battling cancer. We're battling a tumor, brain tumor, and she's named it Donald. Her name is Amy Quinn, and she's treating her tumor with cannabis oil. She's trying her best, so it goes out to you, Amy Quinn. Thanks for just listening to the show.
Hope Donald fucks off.
Fuck off, Donald.
Beat it, Donald.
Get out of there. You don't deserve to be in there.
Nope.
Anyways, that was awesome. It was great having Greg Carwood. We have enough listeners now that we can get more people on. So if you have a guest, they're like, man, you guys should really talk to this person. Let us know at alientheorists@gmail.com, alientheorists, Facebook, Twitter, alientheorists.com, wherever the fuck you're on. We're on there. Snapchat, Instagram. We don't really check those ones as much, but we do check them sometimes. Brayden will be back. Brayden's actually in studio coming up here. We have some case files coming up in studio live. We got our Dungeons and Dragons case file. Dan the Dungeon Master.
See how that works out.
See how that goes. It's gonna be fun. It's gonna be fun to at least try. See what happens.
Should be a hot mess, but that's what you pay for.
Yeah. That'll be available on Patreon only for now. Eventually, if we have a few episodes, maybe we'll probably release a whole new podcast of them. But for now, Patreon only. And that's pretty much it for this week. Anything else?
Groovy.
We'll do our best Brayden impression here. Live long and prolapse.
Should have plugged your nose while you did it. You would have sounded more like a
live long and prolapse.
Duh, wow, he's like he's here.
Perfect.
All right. Peace, guys. Talk to you later.